got a sprain or an itch, pain, rash, swelling, or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Just like a tattoo, I'll always have you.
Today, we're going to try to answer the age-old question, and believe me, this is a question that's been around a lot of years. Why do people get tattoos? But before we do that, we'd like to talk to you about something that we read about just this week, and this was concerning tattoos.
You could call them smart tattoos, because someday they might just be used to monitor your vital signs and much more with no batteries required.
Already, there have been significant works done with sensors that can be injected into the skin to detect glucose or sugar levels, UV light exposure, and even body temperature. Now, research has gone beyond that and developed a new form of tattoo ink that can respond to changes in your body's chemistry.
A team at a school in Munich, Germany, has identified three chemical sensors that change color in response to biomarkers that include glucose, albumin, and pH in the fluids between the body's cells.
For example, one chemical sensor turns green in the presence of albumin. This can be important since decreasing levels of this protein, I'm talking about albumin, may indicate kidney or even liver failure, even before other symptoms develop, giving you an edge on treatment. Another sensor changes from yellow to a dark green as the glucose level increases. High and low glucose levels are signs of poorly managed diabetes.
There is one more sensor that is now in the works, and that is one that turns from yellow to blue as the pH level increases from slightly acidic to alkaline.
So far, the researchers have only tested these chemical sensors on a piece of pig skin, but that's how research starts. And additional testing would certainly be needed before they could even think of using it in people.
Tattoos may also one day help people monitor their environment's effect on their body.
For example, researchers at the University of Colorado in Boulder have developed a tattoo sensor that only shows up on the skin when exposed to UV light. You can see how this could alert people when their sunscreen has worn off.
Another skin sensor becomes visible at different temperatures, which would provide people, literally, with a built-in thermometer.
There's even a group of researchers that have been working on another tattoo prototype that could actually conduct electricity.
This type of tattoo might be used to recharge the battery on a biomedical implant, such as a pacemaker, simply by sending electricity along the tattoo to the device.
The big question that still remains is how willing people will be to get a tattoo, even if it's more medical than aesthetic, although there's no reason really that they can't be both. So a study was done and later published in the Canadian Journal of Diabetes. The researchers asked around 200 people who had diabetes about their comfort level with different types of advanced glucose monitoring technologies.
People with type 1 diabetes were more likely to prefer tattoo glucose sensors than people with type 2 diabetes. Also, women and people under 30 years of age were more likely to be comfortable having a tattoo sensor.
Maybe those who were not so gung-ho with the idea was simply averse to the permanency of a tattoo. So how about temporary tattoo sensors? Now researchers in California are working on temporary tattoo sensors that can monitor glucose levels in the sweat on the skin. Like the temporary tattoos you may have used as a child. You remember those? You apply this device to the skin by dabbing it with water and removing the paper on the back.
The tattoo contains two electrodes that apply a small amount of electrical current, which forces glucose molecules in the skin to come to the surface where they can be measured.
To make this viable for diabetics, they are presently being tested on people in a phase 1 clinical trial. The researchers will compare the results of the tattoo sensor to fingerstick glucose readings.
An advantage of this kind of technology is that it's completely non-invasive. In other words, it is painless, and it fits with most people's active lifestyle.
An advantage is that you would not have to worry about remembering to bring the glucose monitoring equipment when you leave the house. Now, we have to be cautionary because some people may simply not be comfortable with this new technology. And of course, making it easier does not always mean that diabetics will be more apt to track their glucose.
Now that we have covered the tattoo subject, let's talk about why people get tattoos and why many continue to get more tattoos after the first.
You know, many poo-poo the idea that you're going to get addicted to getting tattoos. It sounds a little ridiculous, especially if you're nervous enough just getting a small one. According to a 2018 report from Statista, roughly 46% of Americans have at least one tattoo, and 15% of people have two or three, and even up to 4% have four or five tattoos. But I have asked if people can become addicted to getting tattooed. Remember that, by definition, in order for a person's behavior to be deemed an addiction, it needs to meet a specific criteria, which is called salience, where the addiction becomes the most important thing in a person's life, with mood modification, such as the euphoric feeling that accompanies the activity that they engage in. Then we have tolerance, withdrawal symptoms, conflict, and relapse.
But tattooing does not generally seem to meet this criteria of addiction, at least according to Dr. Griffiths. While any behavior can become impulsive, addiction also relies on constant rewards or reinforcement.
Alcoholics, gamblers, or drug users, for instance, might be able to feed their habits with frequent rewards. But even the most heavily tattooed people can't be constantly getting inked.
Still, while you can't exactly have a tattoo addiction, per se, it can be a dependence where you feel some elements of need and withdrawal, again, at least according to some experts in the field of addiction.
If repeated tattooing is causing problems related to your finances, your work, relationships, emotional well-being, and maybe even your physical health, then you may decide that you need professional help. For many people who love tattoos, though, the passion doesn't interfere with their lives. Rather, at least according to them, it enhances their lives.
Remember that tattooing uses a needle that penetrates the skin. This can potentially feed someone's desire to feel pain or change their appearance due to unhappiness with themselves.
You know, this was explained by Dr. Tracy Alderman in Psychology Today. Dr. Alderman said that once in a while, there will be cases in which piercing and or tattoos do fit the definition of self-injury. But overwhelmingly, self-injury is not a major part of tattooing or piercing.
Some people enjoy doing it because it makes them feel like they are part of a lush culture. The images or words scrawled on their bodies might allow them to both fit into a group and stand out from others.
Some may view tattoos as a way to assert control over their body, especially after cases of trauma or abuse, or even in situations that involve self-harm. A tattoo being used to register a traumatic event can be a powerful redoing, and it starts at the body's barrier of protection, the skin, and uses it as a canvas to bear witness, express, release, and unlock the viscerally felt impact of trauma.
By the biggest reason that many get multiple tattoos may be the fact that it's always a unique experience. And this may actually be the biggest reason of all.
Now, getting back to statistics, around one-third of all Americans between the age of 18 and 29 have at least one tattoo. But 72% of adults with tattoos have tattoos that are usually hidden by clothing. In 2012, around 45 million people in the U.S. had at least one tattoo.
The most common place for a tattoo in women is the ankle, and in men, it is the upper back over the shoulder.
United States citizens spend $1.65 billion a year simply on tattoos.
So if you are still considering getting a tattoo, then just hear us out before you take the plunge, as there are real risks.
To understand this, you really have to have a good idea of how tattoos are really done. A tattoo uses a permanent mark or design made on your skin with pigments inserted through needle pricks into the skin's top layer. Now, typically, the tattoo artist uses a handheld machine that acts kind of like a sewing machine with one or more needles piercing the skin repeatedly. With every puncture, the needle inserts tiny ink droplets.
The process, which, as you probably know, is done without anesthetics, can cause a small amount of bleeding and slightly to potentially significant pain.
Risks? Well, they can include granulomas and other skin problems. Sometimes an area of inflammation called a granuloma can form around the tattoo ink, and tattoos can also lead to keloids. These are raised areas caused by an overgrowth of scar tissue. I mean, you may have seen them in people. Tattoos breach the skin. What this means is that skin infections and other complications are possible.
The tattoo's dyes can cause allergic reactions, especially red, green, yellow, and blue dyes. So you may have an itchy rash at the tattoo site. It is something that most do not know. This can occur even years after you get the tattoo.
A skin infection is also possible right after tattooing. If the equipment used to create your tattoo is contaminated with infected blood, you can contract various bloodborne diseases, such as MRSA, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C.
And here is something that is rarely considered. Tattoos or even permanent makeup might cause swelling or burning in the affected area during magnetic resonance imaging, better known as MRI exams.
In some cases, tattoo pigments can interfere with the quality of the image. Medications or other treatments might be needed if you experience an allergic reaction to the tattoo ink, or you develop an infection or other skin problem near a tattoo.
And make sure you're ready. Do not get one while drunk when your decision-making abilities are, let's say, not other people.
Always make sure that the tattoo artist knows how to spell. There are thousands of examples of spelling and grammar errors that were later seriously regretted, such as the tattoo that was supposed to say no regrets, but got tattooed as no regerts. How about the tattoo that was supposed to sway someone nicknamed Sweet Pea, but had the second word spelled P-E-E. And don't forget photos tattooed that look nothing like the person who you want to impress.
Before you get a tattoo, think carefully about it. If you're unsure or worried that you might regret it, give it more time.
Don't allow yourself to be pressured into getting a tattoo. Remember that weight gain, including pregnancy weight gain, might distort the tattoo or affect its appearance. So not only choose your tattoo carefully, choose its location carefully as well. Big one here, insist on safety precautions. Once you've made the decision to get a tattoo, the next step is to look for not only a reputable studio, but look into who will be doing the tattoo. Keep in mind that regulation requirements and licensing standards do vary from state to state.
Also, it is best to make sure that the tattoo artist wear gloves. The tattoo artist should wash his or her hands before and even during creating the tattoo.
Look at the equipment that the tattoo artist will use and make sure that the tattoo artist removes the needle and tubes from sealed packages before your procedure begins.
As a matter of fact, any pigments, trays, or containers should be unused as well. If the tattoo artist uses non-disposable equipment, make sure that it is sterile. I mean, really clean.
If they do sterilize their own equipment, make sure they use a heat sterilization machine, often called an autoclave, to sterilize all the non-disposable equipment between customers.
Instruments and supplies that can be sterilized with an autoclave, including drawer handles, tables, and sinks, should be disinfected with a commercial disinfectant or bleach solution after each use.
And you're going to have to take care of that tattoo afterwards. Don't forget that. Take good care of your tattoo. How you care for your new tattoo depends on the type and extent of work done.
Keep the tattoo skin clean. Use plain soap and water and a gentle touch. While showering, avoid direct streams of water on the newly tattooed skin, but don't rub the area dry.
You may even want to use a skin moisturizer several times a day. Now, we live in Florida, so it's especially important here to avoid sun exposure. So keep the tattooed area out of the sun for at least a few weeks.
Avoid swimming, so stay out of pools, hot tubs, rivers, lakes, and other bodies of water while the tattoo is healing.
You should know that you need to allow up to 2 weeks for healing, and don't pick at any scabs, because this can seriously increase the risk of infection and can damage the design and cause scarring. Any problems? see a dermatologist.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
One of the risks of tattoos is related to the liver. Remember that the liver is the largest organ inside our bodies.
It does a lot of things. I remember in med school when they said that the liver has over 500 separate functions. For one, it helps your body digest food. It also helps it store energy and remove poisons. So you could call this your poison control center.
Now, hepatitis is an inflammation of the liver. Most cases of hepatitis are caused by viruses. So let's talk about these. They are named for their individual viruses. Luckily, the names are easy.
For example, hepatitis A, B, or C. There are even D and E. But viruses are not the only thing that can cause hepatitis. Drugs or alcohol use can also cause it. In other cases, your body mistakenly attacks healthy cells in the liver.
Hepatitis can be self-limiting or can progress to scarring, cirrhosis, or liver cancer. Even autoimmune diseases can cause hepatitis.
Now let's get back to those five main hepatitis viruses, A, B, C, D, and E. These five types are of greatest concern because of the burden of illness and death they cause and the potential for outbreaks and even epidemic spread.
In particular, types B and C lead to chronic disease in hundreds of millions of people and together are the most common cause of liver, cirrhosis, and cancer.
But hepatitis B, C, and D usually occur as a result of parenteral contact with infected body fluids. Common modes of transportation for these viruses include receipt of contaminated blood or blood products, invasive medical procedures, using contaminated equipment, and for hepatitis B transmission from mother to baby at birth, from family members to child, and also by sexual contact. You can have an acute infection with mild or even no symptoms.
Or you may have symptoms such as jaundice, which is the yellowing of the skin and eyes, dark urine, extreme fatigue, nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain.
So which one should we talk about first? How about hepatitis A? We'll call this HAV or hepatitis A virus.
It is present in the feces of infected persons and it is most often transmitted through consumption of contaminated water or food. Even certain sex practices can also spread HAV.
Although many infections with HAV are mild, with most people making a full recovery and remaining immune from further HAV infections, some HIV infections can also be severe and even life-threatening. Most people in areas of the world with poor sanitation have been infected with this virus. Luckily, there are safe and effective vaccines that are available to prevent HIV.
Second on our list is hepatitis B virus or HBV. It is transmitted through exposure to infected blood, semen, and other body fluids.
It can also be transmitted from infected mothers to infants at the time of birth or from family members to infants in early childhood. Transmission may also occur through transfusion of HBV contaminated blood and the blood products, as well as contaminated injections during medical procedures and through injection drug use.
A big problem for healthcare workers is that HBV can infect them if they sustain accidental needle stick injuries while caring for infected HBV patients.
Again, safe and effective vaccines are available to prevent HBV. Now we get to the third type of hepatitis. You can guess what that is, HBC. That's hepatitis C virus.
It is mostly transmitted through exposure to infected blood. This may happen through transfusion of HCV contaminated blood and blood products, contaminated injections, during medical procedures, and through injection drug use.
Sexual transmission is also possible, but it's much less common. Unfortunately, there is not yet any vaccine for HCV. Coming into the home stretch, we have hepatitis D virus, infections that occur only in those who are also infected with HBV.
The dual infection of HDV and HBV can result in more serious disease and worse outcome. Hepatitis B vaccine provide protection from HDV infection.
Finally, we'll briefly mention hepatitis E virus, which is mostly transmitted through consumption of contaminated water or food. HEV is a common cause of hepatitis outbreaks in developing parts of the world and is increasingly recognized as an important cause of disease even in developed countries. Safe and effective vaccines to prevent HEV infections have been developed, but they're not widely available. How about just looking at the symptoms of hepatitis in general?
Well, first, we have loss of appetite, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, dark color urine, and pale bowel movements. There can also be stomach pain and jaundice. Again, that means the yellowing of the skin and eyes.
If hepatitis does not go away by itself, then it must be treated with medications. Sometimes hepatitis lasts a lifetime. Vaccines can help prevent some viral forms.
At some point, you may have had a test for liver function or a hepatitis panel. One of the liver enzymes is called ALT, which stands for alanine transaminase. It is an enzyme found mostly in the liver, and when the liver cells are damaged, they release ALT into the bloodstream.
Therefore, an ALT test measures the amount of ALT in the blood. Now, high levels of ALT can indicate a liver problem, even before you have signs of liver disease. When do we order an ALT blood test? Well, it could be during a routine exam, or if you have symptoms of liver damage, such as nausea and vomiting, jaundice, abdominal pain, loss of appetite, even unusual itching and tiredness. Now, how about AST tests? This is another liver function test where the enzyme aspartate aminotransferase is measured.
AST is found mostly in the liver, but also in muscle. When your liver is damaged, it releases AST into your bloodstream. An AST blood test measures the amount of AST in your blood. The test can help your healthcare provider diagnose liver damage or disease.
It's measured for the same reasons as the ALT level that we mentioned earlier. And finally, we come to just plain hepatitis testing. There are blood tests for each type of viral hepatitis. Some tests check for antibodies to the virus, which are blood proteins that your immune system makes in response to the virus.
Other blood tests look for actual parts of the virus, such as proteins or genetic material.
But some tests show that you have the infection now. Other tests show that you have had it at some time, or that you have an immunity to it.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.